Hello, Rachel.
Hi, Ryan.
How are you?
You know what? I have this weird thing on my face.
Oh no, are you dying of radiation?
Maybe.
We better get you some medication for that real quick. Let me just prescribe you some pills. They'll sort you out really, really well. Even though you've been heavily affected by it, you should be fine.
I just gotta go in the DNA resync. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, just ravel your noodles back up. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we are the Yum Yum Podcast, likely because of the iconic phrase yum yum from Star Trek Discovery's second season from that character Naan. Remember Naan? Remember Naan?
Naan went bye-bye.
No, Naan went yum-yum, actually. So, and I also said goodbye.
Yum-yum.
So, I am Ryan, and that is Rachel. And we are re-watching Star Trek Discovery one episode at a time and talking about it via that capacity, seeing how the show holds up when you view it a second time round. So, that does mean spoilers and all for Star Trek Discovery. As a whole, for this moment in time, there are only three seasons, and we are nearing the end of this third season. Isn't that right, Rachel?
Yes.
So what episode are we going to be discussing for this one? What episode of Star Trek Discovery are we revisiting?
It's season 3, episode 11, titled Sukal.
Ah.
The IMDb synopsis for this episode is...
You froze. You're like, the IMDb synopsis for this one is... It's scary.
No, I was glitching out like a hollow, thank you very much.
I knew that.
Discovery ventures to the Verubian...
Good luck.
Discovery ventures to the Verubin Nebula, where Burnham, Saru, and Culber make a shocking realization about the origin of the burn, and the rest of the crew faces an unexpected threat.
Yeah, yeah, the unexpected threat. I almost forgot. So, Sukal is the episode, episode 11 of this 13-episode season. Rachel... When we first watched this episode, I remember it quite vividly. It was around the Christmas time. It was late in the evening.
This episode aired on December 24th.
At least in America. We watched it around that holiday time, late afternoon. We went on a walk afterwards to discuss what we thought of the episode. And my thoughts at that moment in time were... It was very bad. I thought it was agonizingly long. And I really said to myself and to you, how is this the third last episode of the season and not the final episode, with the fact that it answers all the questions and yet there's still more to go?
It's he caused the burn, but we're not meant to have figured out
how.
What caused him to cause the burn?
I mean, it's very obvious. The fact it takes two more episodes to figure this out is... for the characters, too, is,
Sukal. He caused the burn.
So I didn't like this episode originally. What about you?
I didn't like it then, and I didn't like it now.
What about it didn't you like then, and is it still holding true now?
I thought it was really stupid and really boring the first time and this time. So my opinion is relatively held the same. I did find a few more things that I slightly enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
They still have caveats, but yeah. I didn't despise it as much on the rewatch.
You know... I'm in an interesting place with Star Trek Discovery. I'm feeling very positive and generous and bountiful. I watched this episode today and I was smiling from ear to ear. I was really enjoying this episode. I've completely flipped around on it. And what I really loved about it was... the sense of closure that I had when I finished it off, because...
It ends on a cliffhanger, Ryan.
No, that I had. Which is, I know that I'll never watch this again, and I'll never have to watch this again.
Oh.
And I feel so fucking good. And when I was sitting down for this, I was smiling because I'm looking at stuff that I absolutely do not like and noticing in my brain, hey, Ryan, see that scene there? You'll never have to watch that scene again after this discussion. See that scene there? You'll never have to view it again. And I was so thrilled. That really changed my mindset on watching it. Sitting down and actually seeing things play out, knowing where they'll go and knowing how unsatisfying it is. I was absolutely over the moon because I will never, ever, ever have to watch this again. Ever. And isn't that great? You know that you're never going to have to see this shitty piece of entertainment again in your life. It's over now.
Yeah.
And isn't that, I don't know, it really made me happy. Okay. Knowing that Sukal will never be in my life again.
I'm glad you found some happiness.
I really did. I really did.
I did not.
What? Because why? Did you not love the end credits? Like I did, that was my favorite scene. When the credits came on and the show ended with a line that was like fucking trite. Oh, the line was, we're too late. The ultimate hack writer's line for cliffhanger ending. We're too late. They should have really ended the episode. No, they should have started this episode with the line, here we go again. That would have been like really cohesive in the hacky writing department. But... Damn, they didn't do it this time around. Maybe next episode.
Ryan, is that just further proof that they can't even do that right? Mm. They can't do anything right. Even hack writing.
Even the hacky writing. No. This is so fucking shit.
Okay,
this fucking
Ryan.
Episode was garbage.
Let's start at the beginning, shall we?
Yeah, can you remember the beginning of the episode?
It picks up right where the last episode ended at Giorgio's memorial. And it is Stamets talking to Adira saying, hey, everybody's here for you. Everybody knows.
I mean, they were here for Giorgio, but okay.
Everybody cares about you.
If they can care for a dictator and a fucking Führer, then they can care for you.
Yeah, you aren't on the outside. You are part of this family now.
I mean, sure, Grey's abandoned you, and I'm only a parental figure in the sense that I see you when we go to work, but whatever, man.
Grey appears again, and Stamets has murdered him.
Grey's like here again? For why? Why? Oh, because the story decided that they can be back in the show now for really no reason. I mean...
Because we needed Adira to have some challenge, I guess?
We needed Adira to express more than one emotion, which has been like... tween emotion. Now they can express joy and confusion and angst in a different way than they've been allowed to in the previous few episodes.
Oh, it's always just angst.
No, it's always angst.
It's always angst. No matter what, it has a kind of veneer of something else. It's always angst, really.
Why is this here?
That scene.
This whole story about... Grey being this ghostly lover from the past that's hung around, then has disappeared and now has reappeared again. And Adira has just been wandering around as a completely nonchalant, useless character in terms of they have no individuality of their own to the point in which they need a dead ghost lover or they need a parental figure. Why can't Adira just be a...
They're a super genius, that's all.
Yeah, why can't Adira just be a functioning person of their own right? Why does Adira need to be defined by the others around them? And does any of this seeking definition through other people ever come up really in this episode? Episode for Adira?
No.
Why is this here? Why is this story constructed
to
the way it is?
To remind us who Adira is, so when they appear at the end of the episode to deliver
the medication,
which they somehow magically knew that they needed to put in their mouth.
Yeah, please explain that one to us, fans. How did Adira know information that was not communicated to the ship and to them? How did Adira know to do that? How did Adira know that they were in a holodeck program that has masked their medication from them? How did Adira know that?
Oh, wait. Do they not have pockets?
Oh, no, I know the answer.
And that was the solution.
I know the answer to that question. They're a tween genius, so that's the answer. Guys, they're kind of like the bomb, huh?
Oh, they figured it out.
Is this...
They deciphered something from comms.
Why did Gray disappear? From a narrative perspective, let's just not even err on the side that there might have been behind-the-scenes production stuff. From a writing perspective, no. why is Gray not a character? And then one that just is not in the show?
That's very different questions, Ryan.
Yeah.
I'm just going to talk about why I think they wrote him out for a few episodes, which is partially what I said before of they need Adira to face some kind of interpersonal challenge because
that is what you have to write in a drama.
Yeah.
So it is just for the sake of causing manufactured drama that doesn't actually thematically tie into anything. It is just there to pad out time.
I think the future, if I had to bet on it, is going to hold more drama.
I know the answer. In my brain, this is the answer to me why Gray is written out for several episodes and then comes back in just walking in being like, hey, they say it in the episode. It's about being seen. I'm not being able to be seen by others. You aren't being able to be seen for who you really are. It is a whole entire journey about being able to be seen. So Gray literally disappeared for several episodes because they felt so unseen that they hid themselves away so that he can come back in these final two episodes just to remind us that he is in the show so that when they go down to the planet with the holodeck and the holodeck can make them actually be seen, the masses that watch this show will have in their brain that theme of being recognized, being seen for who you truly are, and then you can clap and say, they did it! They made Gray being able to be seen by Hugh and Saru and all these other characters. Gray is literally seen! That is why Gray disappeared for several episodes and is not a character. Gray only serves to hammer in a theme. Gray isn't an individual character. I mean, literally, Gray is a symbiotic character with Adira who doesn't have their own character either because they need to be defined by other characters, one of which is Gray, who's a non-character, only exists to hammer in a theme, and the other one is Stamets, whose entire character has entirely flipped their perspective off-screen to accept Adira as this surrogate child and treats Adira like a four-year-old with cuckoo baby-like dialogue at them in which he whisper talks and gives loving hand gestures and strokes on the back and all of that. And it's like, where does this come from? And it's because it all ties into the reverse engineering, which is we want to hit these themes. We want to hit these messages. How do we do that? Oh, well, we want to get to those. Let's just course correct every single character involved to get to those beats. It's a very cynical and very dry and very boring approach from a writing perspective to hit those themes. They're not interested in actually fleshing out or making characters along the way. As long as you get that moment at the end, which is Gray is being able to be seen, the audience will clap because, hey, I recognized that was a conflict that was happening in an episode before. So they've resolved that conflict now. I mean, damned if it matters that the conflict was happening to a non-character. Damned if it happened to the point in which there was so much story that could have been shown on screen, but they decided to do it off screen. As long as you get the result, that's all that matters. not the journey, not the story being told. It's only the conclusion. It's only the end. It's only when you open the mystery box.
Ryan, the idiom is, the ends justify the means.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't need to worry about the journey.
Or the metaphysics. We don't have time for either of them.
No, no. But you know what a story really isn't about?
What?
The journey.
No, fuck
it. The growth of the characters.
Or even knowledge of them.
Invested in them. Getting to know them. Making them feel like they're actual people.
Here's something. And do you remember this? Do you genuinely remember this, or because I sarcastically made us remember this, which is Adira is an art genius. Remember that's a character trait that we've never seen again?
Oh, they can play an instrument because Gray can.
Yeah, but that wasn't their character trait.
No.
Their character trait was that they were an art genius. We've never seen that come back up again.
The quilt.
It's never been exactly. It's never been relevant again.
I didn't take that as her being an art genius. They
literally said, "You're an art genius," and then Adira said loud, "I'm an art genius," because
they had to fuck off. I don't believe you.
It's true.
Okay, I'm an art genius.
At the beginning of this episode, they arrive at the Virubulan Nebula, and the first course of action that they take is, let's just fucking drive into the thing willy-nilly. Let's not stop and survey and look at our surroundings and do the things that a Starfleet officer would do. And the justification for this is, oh, Saru is emotional. He's compromised because there's a living person inside of that nebula that could be a Kelpian. His emotions are overwrought. That is the reverse engineering again. They knew, as writers, they wanted the season to end the way that they wanted it, which is to have Michael in the captain's chair.
The revolving captain's chair.
And Saru has to be compromised enough for it to be warranted the change of positions, because from the very beginning, Saru's entire character arc has been gaining confidence in leadership. So how do you kick him out of the position of leadership? When you know that you want that to be the outcome. As a writer, you know that's what you want. Even if it goes against the character journey and the arc and what the audience is enjoying, or even the character themselves, you want that ending. How do you do that? You manufacture drama and you manufacture character faults and you amplify little things about the character to be massive things. So Saru has evolved and now he has emotions that are exploding out of the wazoo, and he has such a homesick attachment to the idea of what is a Kelpian in the future that he is willing to just drive the ship into the nebula and fuck everything up so that the plot can happen. That's the only reason. If they did it like a normal show, including Star Trek Discovery in the past, of parking the ship outside, scanning it, sending probes in, figuring out that Book's ship could go in much easier than theirs, and giving him medication to survive the radiation, there wouldn't be a plot. That's the reason none of that happens. None of the logical stuff. None of the stuff that doesn't make our characters look like fucking idiots. They're willing to make the characters look like idiots time and time again because we need the spectacle.
We need to get to that ending, and we need to make it spectacular on the way.
We need the spectacle and we need the plot to happen. Screw the characters. They are just objects to get us to the end. They're not things that are important.
Things to stick in the picture.
They're things. They don't see them as people, these characters.
No.
It doesn't feel like they even think that they're real in any way. They are just pieces on a board to move around to get to the end game.
I think only the actors may feel like their characters are people because they spend so much time embodying them and trying to,
of course,
figure it out.
But the writers?
I doubt.
They can talk in empty platitudes about the personhood of every individual character, but they're willing to screw over that just to get to the drama, just to get to the end point, just to justify the stupid decisions made along the way. Does Saru driving into the nebula and fucking up the shields and all that so they can't just go in there and get Sokol out easy peasy? That is what makes this whole Sokol journey frustrating for me, is it is prolonged. This goes for 3 episodes. And it only needed to go for 1. And the reason it goes for 3 is because fucking Saru gets emotional, fucks everything up, and then Osira comes in very conveniently. Might I add, Osira comes in and very conveniently knows the layout of the ship completely, knows exactly how the spore drive works, and conveniently knows that Paul Stamets is the one that operates it. How does Osira know this? Because Osira scanned the ship once.
She scanned the ship once.
That's not enough.
So she knows exactly where to transport those 2 guards so that they can grab Stamets.
How would you know that?
And pull him away from the goo.
How would you know that? With a scan, how would you know that specific area that is like any other engineering lab?
900 years in the future, Ryan, and she's evil.
Okay.
Few people are just evil. So it's nice to kind of layer it and have reasons behind her actions. Osira feels very strongly about a lot of things, mm-hmm. You know, especially her people that she's fiercely protective of. And she's worked really, really hard, as have her, you know, people, to sort of to get to the position that they're in right now. And so we will see how that develops by the end of the season.
Remember the bit in this episode where they revealed that the Discovery can cloak now, and they did it like now, not when several episodes back they mentioned that the ship has all this new technology. They never mentioned the cloaking.
Oh yeah, since the refit, don't we have a cloak?
Yeah, come on. For people who are fans of Discovery, wasn't that lazy? Just like
they
last
got to see
second,
a cool
oh,
thing,
we-
though. They got to see a cool thing.
No, no. What they got to see is an addition to the canon. Starfleet has cloaking technology? They got it. Clap like a seal and wait for the fish to be thrown to you. No. It's lazy because they introduce it as a deus ex machina last second. And then it's even stupider because what do both of the ships do while cloaked? They stay in the same fucking position? It makes Osira, who's supposed to be a threatening, intelligent villain, look like a dumbass. And it makes Tilly, who's supposed to be this fresh-faced ensign who's gone over her head in the captain's chair, but every single person says, no, you're capable and smart. You deserve this chair. It makes her look like a fucking idiot too. It just makes, again, because the plot needs to happen, we're willing to sacrifice our character's integrity for it to happen. We're willing to make them look stupid,
Ryan,
for it to happen.
There are a lot of decisions in this episode that seem to be influenced by budgetary issues of them overspending in some areas, namely the kelp monster. So, you know, we only get the one shot of them decloaking and cloaking in the first place, and that's the exact same angle, and then they get to reuse footage from Short Trek too.
Oh yeah, for Saru's flashbacks. Let's talk about that budget, shall we? This season we've been really complaining that they either are lazy or have a lower budget, because a lot of things happen off screen and a lot of things important happened off screen. And I remember people talking when this aired about that episode, The Sanctuary, saying this episode's so cheap. They're just in the forest and they're shooting at some guy's house. And then this episode comes along, Sokol comes along, and it was like applauded because like, oh, this is where they were saving that budget. This is where all the budget was going, to this movie quality level CGI creature that's running around and scaring people. And it is impressive. I think that creature looks amazing. I think it's really clever. I think it's really smart. Like, I love the look of it. I love the sound design. I love that you can tell it was like a real person that they've, you know, done the motion capture. Over.
I still would have liked it better if it was mixed with practical. But yeah. That's just me.
But this is the rub. Is this creature and this CGI holodeck world
important to the story?
Not even that.
Significant to the canon?
Not even that. No.
An influence on the episode?
Not that. Is sacrificing 10 episodes worth of quality storytelling because you don't have the time, money, or effort in it worth that? Is it worth sacrificing 10 episodes of storytelling to have a cool CGI effect in this episode?
CBS says yes!
Because that's what it comes down to. That's what it comes down to. There's been so many moments in this in which it's either because of laziness or budgetary reasons that important storytelling moments have been clearly sacrificed or excised or non-existent. And what was it all for? So that you could get a special CGI creature that in the end doesn't really contribute or matter. It's cool. It adds thematic stuff. But really, look into your heart and say clearly, was this creature worth sacrificing 10 episodes worth of storytelling? Every single episode leading up to this moment has had a moment
in which you think that there's 10 episodes of storytelling in these episodes.
Yeah, you're right. But in every single episode, we've had many moments where it's like they couldn't afford to tell that bit. They didn't have the money or they were too lazy. And it was all for what? For a creature that's covered in CGI smoke and kelp.
You know, yes, there's a tremendous amount of time and effort and frankly love put into all the CG work on the show. That is not where we start. The CG work on the show is there to support the emotional story, period.
Let's talk about Osyra.
What about the green bitch? That is all that they put to her.
Osyra knows all out of nowhere. And it's maybe people I'm forgetting.
Omniscient Osyra.
Maybe I'm forgetting the
important. She's the queen of the Emerald Chain.
Maybe I've forgotten, and the next episode will slap me in the face and say, "You stupid idiot, Ryan. Don't you remember? This informant was on the ship." But for most of the time, she just has information that doesn't make any sense. And she just wins because she has information that we have no understanding as an audience how she knows that. I know that because I've watched the show. But how does Osyra know that? She hasn't watched the show. She doesn't know these things. How does she know that the spore drive uses a human component to drive it? How does she know that is Paul Stamets? How does she know that the spore drive is located in this specific lab that is identical to many others? He wasn't on the ship, though, and he wasn't even in this episode.
But he's a super genius.
No, what you're doing there is trying to fill in the blanks where the writers didn't.
Yeah,
you're just trying to make sense of something that they didn't bother to put sense into. They just wanted you to think Osyra's bad, and she is a badass, and she's wicked, so she knows everything. She's super smart. She's so clever that she stayed cloaked in the same position. That's how clever she is. That's how clever she is. And don't worry, Tilly was even more clever by doing the exact same fucking thing. It's embarrassing. Is Osyra better now? Because in this, she did have more of a personality. She was kind of like cheeky. And there was that whole back and forth of Tilly and her on the view screens sassing off against one another. What did you think of that, Rachel?
You know the phrase, dull as dishwater.
Yeah.
It's slightly less dirty dishwater. So it's still dull, but it's not as dull as dishwater.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. When I watched that sequence, those two sequences in which they sass off against each other, and this is like seeing Tilly take leadership.
Let's skip Freud.
You know what I thought to myself?
Cake is eternal?
No. What I thought to myself was Deanna Troi, Crusher, fucking Janeway, Major Kira, Dax, all of these great female characters that we've seen take leadership positions have either commanded the ship or had to negotiate with hostile forces. Some of those characters, are weak female characters, like Deanna Troi, but all of them were so much better at leadership and less embarrassing than Tilly. I just watched that scene and I just went, wow, this really does feel like writers writing for teenage girls in a high school environment. You know what I'm saying? Like, could you imagine Janeway having that kind of sass off with an opponent? Could you imagine Major Kira or even Deanna Troi, Crusher? Could you imagine that? No, you can't, because even though some of those characters aren't the greatest, they weren't, when they took leadership, they weren't pathetic. And the people who were arguing against also weren't pathetic. When I watched it, all I could say, the word I describe is cringe. It's the best word to describe. It's cringe. Hearing these two women sass off against each other like they're in Mean Girls. It's...
Who here has been personally victimized by Star Trek Discovery?
Yeah. Me.
A certain 19th century Earth neurologist would say that you've just proven the idea of projection. You tell me I'm a fraud because deep down inside, you kind of feel like a fraud. It's interesting. It's not just a human defense mechanism. It's galactic.
Captain Tilly. She fails. Saru as captain fails. Everyone fails except for Michael. So my question is, in the future,
she's going to be the best captain, right?
In the future, when they eventually want to explore more of her captaincy and whatever Saru wants to do and all of that, are you at all interested?
Well, I'm not interested in Tilly at all anymore, so no.
You're not interested to see how she picks herself back up and manages to be a good first officer or be a good captain?
Nah.
This didn't entice you, didn't you? She had some badass moments, right? She stood her ground.
And she did figure out a way to solve the problem that felt like only Tilly would think of this.
Yeah.
Because the writers only gave Tilly those pieces of information.
Yeah. So, are you not interested?
No.
Why?
For that reason, I know that there's no stakes.
Mm.
I don't care about Tilly as a person. I don't care about the rest of the crew. Doesn't feel like for fucking up she's going to lose any position in the first place. So her succeeding at something isn't going to have any big effect on me either.
Mm.
Because part of like being attached to a character is feeling their wins and their losses.
Yeah. For me, what it comes down to, for every character, but I use Tilly and Saru because out of the main crew of characters, their arcs, their journeys are the most obvious and well-defined, which are, they're both very similar.
Yeah.
They're both gaining confidence and propelling towards a higher position of power, i.e. the captain's chair, i.e. leadership. And it's very clear and it's very fun to watch because there's always something fun to watch about these socially anxious characters getting over that and being able to be competent. And I don't think there's any interest from my end to see them grow any further because the writers are willing to sacrifice and burn all of that to the fucking ground and make those characters failures so that Michael, the main character, can succeed. And yes, Michael Burnham is the protagonist of the show, and you should focus on her. I agree with that. I don't like her, but that's the show. What I don't care for is making the other characters with well-defined arcs failures just so that that character can be a success. I know in an arc, in a story, you have to have ebbs and flows. You have to have those wins and losses. But I don't get the sense that that's what this is from the writers. I get the sense that they're just willing to break Tilly and to break Saru in half to get to the end, which is making Michael succeed. So I'm not interested because maybe one day we will see these characters go through success again. But I'm also knowing in my heart that the writers are willing to screw them over for no reason other than just for the drama of it, and other and just for Michael to win at the end, for Michael to be the badass at the end, for Michael to be the cool one. And I'm not interested in seeing characters I like and arcs that could be great just thrown in the fucking garbage just for that.
Is there some connection to Kaminar now that maybe, ooh, maybe Ambassador Saru for Kaminar to the Federation one day? There's many options and many places we can go with it, and I'm looking forward to that. What's ahead?
Michael, Saru, and Hugh beam down to this planet, this dilithium nursery.
Ship.
Yes, yes, to the ship
because
on the dilithium nursery.
Because if they
nursery,
landed on the planet,
the radiation would kill them pretty quickly.
Well, no, I'm pretty sure the exact line was that they would be dying a slow, painful death by now.
Oh, okay.
Or at least a painful death.
Yes. We're splitting hairs at this point. They're going to be dead no matter what. They beam down to this ship, and before they know it, oh my God, Rachel, look what happened. They've entered a Star Trek Discovery fucking nonsense thing, which is, wouldn't it be cool if they beamed into the planet, they were like in a Little Red Riding Hood kind of world? Oh, that would be cool. What happens if Michael was actually wearing a Little Red Riding Hood outfit? Oh, awesome.
Oh, we're so smart.
Oh, what happens if there were different kinds of aliens? Oh, that's awesome. Awesome. Why? I don't know. It would be cool. Wouldn't it be cool if Saru was a human and
it's
Michael
a program.
Was a... program. Yeah, it's a program.
We can do anything we want.
We program him. We program them to look like things that Sukal would be comfortable with, even though he knows what other even though there are other Kelpian programs, even though there are other human programs. Make him, because it would be cool. So our characters beam down into a situation because it would be cool and they wanted to spend the budget on spooky monsters and labyrinths and staircases and smoke and CGI castles. All of this is in service.
It was meant to be called the Citadel. Or
yeah.
Citadel originally.
And this is all in service of our main crew of characters finding the lone survivor who was once a child and has now grown up, but still has the mental state of a child and the fears of a child.
They tease out his name for ages.
Yes, yes. And they find Sukal. Sukal, who's 125 years old and yet looks younger than Saru, weirdly. Mm-hmm. And younger than his dad, who for a fact never got to be that old, Saru's dad. Remember, this is the Saru's never seen a Kelpian that old.
How old is Saru meant to be at this point?
We don't know, but he's not over 100. That's for sure. But that's splitting hairs again. This is all in service of the crew coming down, being trapped on the planet, and finding out that Sukal is the reason for the burn.
What?
And how is Sukal the reason for the burn? He screamed
Cries.
Real loud one time, and his sonic burst scream rippled through the subspace, and somehow it affects dilithium because he's affected by dilithium because his DNA adapted.
When his cells were multiplying and dividing in utero, the radiation affected them. I'm pretty sure that's what Hugh says.
What was your reaction to the burn reveal when it first happened? Do you remember how you felt?
Somehow I was like, this is as stupid as I was expecting, but also even more stupid.
Yeah.
Like somehow it was like, yeah, this is the kind of thing that I expected, but it's even worse in ways that I didn't expect. Like the stupidity of it being just one person and an accident.
Which
I
think
expecting.
Could work. I think that could still work.
But the fact that it's like through this radiation manipulation on a dilithium planet that's inside of a nebula.
Yeah.
Like the contrived levels of making this situation were just astounding. Because I was just like,
you've got so many different things going on here, and basically none of them make complete sense on their own. And you've just chucked them all in and gone, well, here you go.
Well, my three primary thoughts, and they still ring true. The first one is, this is hilariously stupid. The second one was, how is this fun? And the third one was, how was I supposed to be able to guess that? And all of those are very important on the initial watch and on the rewatch. It is dumb. The burn is dumb. Oh, this is the best season of the show, Ryan. No. The whole show hinges on the reveal that the entire galaxy got fucked in the ass because a little boy screamed real loud one time. It's dumb. The reason it's dumb, I mean, it just looks dumb, but come on. I don't think I need to explain it any further. A boy cried one time and the Federation collapsed over practically in one night. Stupid. Why is this? How is this fun? And what I mean by that is we don't like the mystery box format that this show has deployed many a times, but I can understand how people have fun with this because they analyze it, they comb over the thing and look for little details that can lead them to the third thing, which is, how was I supposed to figure this out? How is anyone supposed to be able to guess this one? I don't like the first season of Discovery. I don't like Lorca being a Mirrorverse captain. I don't like the Red Angel. But when you rewatch it, and if you're a keen-eyed viewer when you first saw it, you saw the steps that led to those reveals. Even if they were stupid, this... how am I supposed to have figured out that a little boy cried so hard one time was the cause of the burn? And when I rewatch it, there's nothing there.
Ryan,
until this episode. All of it is just...
there's an assumption that you've made, I think at least mainly on the part of the writers, which is that they want you to have been able to figure it out.
No. It doesn't even matter if it's that they want. They need to be able to let us, the audience, see how these things led to these things.
I don't think they want to do that. I don't think they care about that. That's the assumption that I think you're making, that they want to leave those breadcrumbs, that they want some rewatch value in terms of the mystery. I think they don't care about that because they... are so much more focused on the character developments, and because we aren't interested in the character...
but they're willing to fuck over the character development for this reveal. It's all in service of the end justifying the means. They don't give a shit about the character development. We just went on a whole tirade about Saru and Tilly. They're willing to wipe their ass all over character development for the reveal of the burn and to kick Saru off the chair and shoot Osira in the face.
No, I don't think they see it that way. I think... they see it as, this is the state of the world and they need to be able to help restore the Federation, which involves identifying the cause of the burn because Michael says so. They can't repair anything
because Michael says so
until they know the cause, because otherwise it's just going to continue to fester, right?
Because Michael
says
so.
And they need to get rid of the Emerald Chain because Vance and Book say that they're really bad and we see them kill a bunch of people, right?
Yep.
So... we need that, and you know what? Saru's been captain for a while now. He's confident as a leader.
And he's emotionally compromised.
So we need him to face a new challenge. We need to make him a leader within his community.
And I, you know what?
And the challenge of fatherhood. They don't see it as them undoing the... work that's done with Saru. It's giving him a new challenge to face, one that's unlike anything that he thought that he would experience, because
or us, the audience, would want.
Yeah. Martin.
No, I'm right.
Maybe we want Papa Saru.
Yeah, and maybe I also wanted to see him actually fucking succeed in the arc that's been his entire character. But screw that. Throw that out the bin. Throw that into the bin. I get what you're saying. Okay. But that still doesn't negate the points that I'm having. As a viewer and as someone re-watching the show, how was I supposed to guess this? I wasn't supposed to guess this. So how am I supposed to have fun with this? I'm not supposed to have any fun, I guess. And thus I go back to...
The spectacle is meant to be enough fun.
Rachel, even a lot of the diehard Discovery
Stop
fans...
Stop making me defend this show.
But even a lot of the diehard Discovery fans... Yeah, I've seen many of them agree the reveal of the burn was stupid and pointless and dumb because it does that. How was I supposed to guess this? How was I supposed to have fun with this? And it all goes back to the first point I have, which is this is hilariously stupid. Because...
Oh, absolutely.
Because this is what shows are supposed to be. They know their audience, too. They're three seasons in. They've teed up their audience to look for the details. Remember last episode we had with our good friends at Starfleet Underground? They told us, this show has trained you to look out for the references and to get that cold synapsis in your brain pumping with, I remember that, I figured that out because I looked at these little details. The newspaper had the thing from TOS. There's no fun here watching season three when you're looking at it in the terms of what season three is, which is, what is the burn? Because there's no way you could gather all the little pieces, even on a rewatch, to go, oh, yes, of course, it was the fact that a little boy cried so hard. No. So it's just stupid.
Bodies adapt. All this dilithium and subspace radiation, his cells acclimatized to it in utero as they divided.
But he was only a child.
Then something must have happened to trigger him.
I've heard this, and I want to know your opinion on this. The people who do defend the Sukal crying real loud say this, and I've thought about this a lot, which is, it works thematically for the grander season, because the season has been touching upon the themes of loneliness and trauma, and so... What a great way of exploring that by having a character whose trauma and loneliness caused a galactic-wide event that did the exact same thing. We've been seeing those themes play out again and again throughout the season, rippling like a wave. So that makes it all okay that Sukal crying caused the burn because it works thematically. What do you think about that?
It doesn't matter because I don't care. The show doesn't make me care. I don't care about the characters. Thus, even with those thematic links, it just feels lazy and trite.
Yeah.
If anything, that defense makes me go, well, that just makes it even more fucking stupid to me.
Yeah. My counter to that is you can have something... be thematically, metaphorically, or writing-wise on brand and on point, but sometimes a stupid thing is too stupid to ignore. Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, has a lot of thematic on-point moments, but does that make that film a genius thing, or
no.
Does it make it one of the worst Star Trek films? Nemesis.
It's still fun to me.
A lot of the Star Trek movies that are bad, like
it's
Nemesis
bad.
Or Insurrection or Into Darkness
or
Star Trek V, a lot of them have themes that they're hitting and a lot of them have goofy shit that ties into those themes, but does that make those things good?
No!
You can still hit your theme, but it can still be stupid or bad. And I'm sorry, Sukal's theme of trauma and him crying so loud that he's disconnected everyone from each other. Interesting on paper, but the way that the show's been constructed and the visual of seeing this man-child cry out loud and the sonic beam shoot from his head, the sense of dread that I had when I saw that of being like, you've got to be fucking kidding me that he cried so loud. And then it spends three whole episodes flicking its belly button going, maybe that is the case. Maybe it is. Me. What caused him to do the cry, though? Me. It's obviously his mum died. We got it. We got it as soon as we found out that he had a mum. Jesus Christ. We need to spend another 2 hours flicking over that one? Oh.
Yeah, it really was, like, on the first watch. As soon as Saru said that those markings were because she was pregnant, it's like, okay, I immediately know the rest of this. And then the show treats me like I'm so fucking stupid that I can't piece two things together.
And we gotta... No, it's not even... I don't even think it's that they think you're stupid. They need to get to 13 episodes.
Well, that too.
So, but let's pad this out.
They need to treat me like I'm that stupid in order to pad it out.
And again, I don't even think it's they're treating you stupid. They're tying it into how you're supposed to emotionally feel, not how you're supposed to logically look at this. Because we're looking at this from a very
cold,
logical...
Oh, we're never meant to think logical... about Star Trek Discovery, are we?
No, we're supposed to cry at the fact that he cried so loud that he destroyed the universe.
She knew you would be frightened to see her like that. She wanted you to feel connected, loved.
I was alone.
You are no longer alone.
I gotta talk about it. It's what? Gotta come up. It's gotta come up. We'll talk about it in this episode, now.
Yes.
Was it an annoying thing to you that at no point in this journey did they just consider just kill Sukal and move on? Because it frustrated me to tears. There were so many moments. I know they can't. They're good characters. They're good guys. But there was just so many. Because these episodes are 3 episodes long, and this guy just is like this emotionally stunted little baby man that's running around, and he acts like Crichton from Red Dwarf, but without any fucking humor to him and a personality. He just runs around being like, "You're not a program." I just wanted them to shoot him and transport the fuck out of there.
Oh, yeah, but they can't run the risk of killing him in a way that would make him scream.
I mean, shooting him is really, really quick and easy.
Yes.
I mean, you see their phases now? They make you just disappear into atoms real quick, so they could do that.
Yeah, you do just burst.
Shoot him in the mouth, then he won't scream. Right in the fucking throat. He's gone. Dead. I just wanted to bring that up because my good friend from high school who watches this show, he texted me being like, "Oh, it's so annoying that they just don't kill Sukal." A guy who loves Star Trek Discovery, because they just drag this shit out to the point in which your brain does go there, right? Did your brain go there when viewing it the first time? Did your brain go to, if they just killed him and moved on, this story would end?
No, not really. I wish that Star Trek Discovery as a show would just go die, but I didn't really think about them specifically shooting Sukal, because, you know, then the show would be... still going.
We ready for the Huda?
Yes!
Hugh was here.
End this misery, please.
Can we give a round of applause for Wilson Cruz? Good on you, Wilson. Good on you, Wilson.
You rock that earring.
Wilson had the hardest job of any actor in Star Trek Discovery in this one. To sit down and sternly say, without just bursting into laughter, why Sukal could cause the burn. I was, he deserves all the fucking acting awards for being able to stifle the laughter from that.
He owns that moment.
He had some of the dumbest lines of dialogue ever put to the fucking script in this show to explain one of the dumbest reveals that they've ever had. And Wilson Cruz, as a professional, delivered it with absolute sincerity, adding to my humor. To it. It is so funny to me when these actors have to stand there very sternly and very seriously say stupid shit, and hearing Wilson Cruz just use his entire acting career to give that exposition
he
as to why this could happen.
He has.
It was magical. I almost shed a tear at watching him spout out that nonsense with a straight face. I would want to watch the bloopers, because I would imagine, like, that's one of those ones where it took 141 takes and that was the best take. You know, like, because when he read the script, he must have been like, oh boy, what did I do wrong for them to make me deliver these lines? Because he had to explain how this medically is possible.
But Ryan, remember what Wilson Cruz said about season two's dialogue?
He has no merits, you're right. So Hugh Colbert has a new characteristic in this episode.
He found a purpose that he didn't know he was looking for.
His season two journey came back into play in this episode. They've made jokes about it, but now it's back.
He stayed because he knows what it's like to be lonely.
Yeah, and to face...
And disconnected from the world. Those themes.
Themes again. And to face death straight on. I found it very odd. Because season three has defined his character so much that when he stayed on the planet and did this little diatribe about how he wants to stay there because of these themes he learned from season two.
Yeah.
Even though he's evolved as a character away from that. I just shook my head being like, they're doing it again. They're sacrificing character so that things can be the way they are. They're doing this so that there can be drama for Paul. Because Paul doesn't want him to be on the planet. So Hugh's still on the planet. And then for the later episodes of Michael refusing Paul to go back and save Hugh so that we can have tension for next season.
What?
The only reason that Hugh Colbert is on this planet is to set up interpersonal conflicts for later, not because of it tying into anything that his character has actually grown into this season. They're willing to, for this one, regress his character to justify the means.
I think the future, if I had to bet on it, is going to hold more drama.
What would you give, Sukal?
Yum.
So quick to the trigger there.
You are far too fast on the trigger.
I would give it a yum as well.
Yum.
It was too long. This episode's like almost an hour long and I fucking felt every single minute dragging by. There was a moment where we paused it and it was like 15 minutes left and there was just such a big sigh of like defeat in that. This episode's paced terribly and it's all in service of revealing the cause of the burn, which... You kind of knew as soon as you saw Sukal. You're like, oh, he caused it.
It's not even the cause yet.
Oh, no. We already figured that out before this episode started.
Yeah.
Which is the mother died and he was upset about it.
It's them confirming that the nebula is the source of the burn, which we also figured out a number of episodes ago. But, let's not make that same mistake with this episode then, Ryan. Let's not make it overlong and...
complicated. I do want to touch upon this. I've noticed this each season.
Yes.
3 to 4 episodes before the end, they reveal the thing and then they walk about the place and then reveal it again at the end like it's a big surprise. First season, a little bit more subtle, which is Captain Lorca was a Mirrorverse captain because if you watch that season, you see him deliberately fuck with the coordinates to get them there. And that's a three or four episodes before the end of the season. Second season, 3 or 4 episodes before the end, they tell you that Michael is the Red Angel and that she's the one who set the signals. And then they walk around being like, no, it's actually her mum, but why would it be? And then at the end, they're like, Michael, you're the angel. Yeah, we knew. You told us 4 episodes ago, and you've just been dawdling around the place. Here, they tell us that Sukal is the reason for the burn. We show how he is caused, we show how he does it, and we, the audience, already know it's because his mother died. You just know. And they still wander about the place, and then, in the final episode, reveal it's because his mother died. Why do they keep doing that? Why is this consistently a thing that, no matter the showrunner... they reveal their hand several episodes before and then pretend that they didn't.
I don't know. It's stupid every time. And if anything, it's more stupid each time they do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And it's less subtle each time that they do it.
Well, like, everything about the show is getting less
like,
subtle.
At least with the Red Angel, it was a genuine surprise that her mother was a Red Angel, but then that was like a double twist of like, you thought it was Michael, it was actually her mother. Actually, it was still Michael. Fuck you. This one,
There's nothing to it. There's nothing to it.
So, Rachel, what will we be talking about and discussing for the next episode? What is up next on Star Trek Discovery?
There is a tide. After capturing the USS Discovery, Osira seeks a meeting with Admiral Vance while Burnham and the crew must overcome unimaginable odds as they attempt to regain command of their ship.
Oh, you mean just do Die Hard? Okay, I remember that episode. So we'll be discussing that one next time.
It's a full 0.7 higher rated than Sukal.
Yeah, I mean, we watched The Sanctuary, so I understand why that's the lowest rated episode. But, like, I'm not surprised. I am a bit surprised that this one ranks as a 6 on IMDb, just because most people review bomb the shit out of terrible reveal episodes, and this is, like, a terrible reveal episode. Like, the reveal is a guy cried too hard. Yeah, not buying that one, sweetheart. So we'll be back next episode discussing There Is a Tide... until then, you can find us on the social medias of Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Reddit, with under Yum Yum Pod or Yum Yum Podcast. We're always posting things on there. We are always giving out memes and furthering discussion. So make
and
sure.
And if you want even further discussion from us, you can head over to our Patreon, which is Yum Yum Podcast as well. And if you want a bit of more, maybe private style interaction, you can send us an email at yumyumpod@gmail.com.
Yes, give us those emails, follow us on those socials, rate and review us on whatever podcatcher allows it, and yes,
share the love.
On our Patreon, we have the extra content on there. If you want to support the show, we have episodes in which we give our thoughts on other things, discuss the films, and yes, talk about other episodes of Star Trek, the best and worst rated episodes. All of the info for all of that good stuff is in the description for this, so make sure to click on those and do all the stuff that we tell you to do, because the ends justify the means here, people. We want you to give us a 5-star review and interact with us on social media and pay us on Patreon for extra content, okay? Jeez! Oh, Rachel, we didn't mention it, but Grudge was in this episode.
Yeah, Grudge had her DNA fixed too.
You know what Grudge is?
A queen?
You got it.